I have a bit of a routine that I use when I start working on a sermon. I generally preach once a month, so I have time to ponder and prepare and read anything I can get my hands on the topic. Starting on the Friday before the Sunday I'm going to preach, I start getting down to business with the goal of having what I call a credible first draft by the end of the day on Friday. That draft includes the main points that I would like to make with the sermon, the ideas that I hope that you will take away on Sunday mornings. Then on Saturday, I work on polishing and refining all the pieces, and then I throw out all the stuff that doesn't fit with the main points, saving them hopefully for another sermon. For this sermon today, I did all the usual things. But what was different this time was for this sermon, I prayed. I prayed that my sermon would help rather than harm. I prayed that women who were struggling with the pain of sexual aggression in their past would find some meaning in my words today. I prayed that the men in the congregation would open their hearts and not be defensive. And I prayed for strength and resilience for all of us, living at such a time of great challenge and great disruption. But most of all, I prayed that we would find the strength to support all of the women who have come forward to say, "Me too." Now, let me say from the very beginning that this sermon and the ritual that we're going to do today is focused on those who identify as women. We know that men are sexually abused as well, and we know their pain is real. However, most of the sexual abuse in our world is men over women. And that is generally because it is not about sex, but it is about power. And most of the power in our world is held by men. Roger will be preaching on masculinity in August and will address some of these issues from a male perspective. Now, since everything hit the fan in October with the Me Too movement, many Unitarian Universalist ministers have preached on Me Too, and I listened to many sermons on this topic. There are so many ways that I could parse this topic for a sermon. But I'm called to focus on the question of why women don't speak up, and the question of what it is like for them when they do. I am inspired to find ways for our culture to learn how to respond to this great wound that has been opened. And I'm called to do what I can at this moment of great witness to turn things around, so that no woman must live in shame or fear or pain. The Me Too movement feels to me like a bandage that has been ripped off by millions of women all at the same time. Women who need support, encouragement, and respect for their stories and their pain. Now, I learned recently from a nurse friend that there are several kinds of wounds. Some are the kind that need to be covered up. The more superficial kind, they can heal rather quickly, and they heal from the outside. Deeper wounds, however, need to remain uncovered. They don't heal from the outside in, but from the inside out. They heal slowly and in a granular way, little bits of healing throughout the wound that over time coalesce into a completion of the healing process. Emotional wounds can be like physical wounds. Some won't heal if they are left covered and unseen. By the time they are adults, most women have experienced some form of sexual harassment or abuse. This can be from catcalls on the street, the snapping of your bra in the hallway at school, workplace harassment, childhood sexual abuse, date rape, stranger rape. These things afflict the kind of wounds that need light and air to heal granularly, slowly, over time. And yet, these wounds are the ones most likely to be covered up. These wounds are the one most likely to be unlikely to be shared, even with other women. So why don't women speak up? From an early age, our culture encourages girls to be sweet and nice, to not make waves or cause trouble. And we should never get angry. We should be pretty, but if we are too pretty or seductive, we can provoke men in ways that lead to problems of our own making. The message that women learn is that men's sexual needs are our responsibility, and that we should be very careful not to create sexual needs that we cannot satisfy. We learn that it's the responsibility of women to protect ourselves from men's sexual aggression, that it is our problem if we are unsafe on the streets or in our home, that it is our problem if we dress in a way that causes a man to act sexually aggressive towards us. This is what we learn. Now, if you think our culture has progressed, think again. Did you know that oral sex is the most common form of sexual activity among teens, and most of them don't consider it to be serious sexual activity? And who do you think is doing the giving? And who do you think is doing the receiving? Now, given all this, it is surprising that we even question why women don't speak up. But they don't. Because they fear they won't be believed, because they worry they will be blamed, because they are embarrassed, ashamed, because they blame themselves, because they feel powerless and helpless. Can you imagine how hard it would be for a woman of color to bring forth a complaint against a white man? Just look at what happened at the first trial of Bill Cosby, or how the accusers of Donald Trump or Bill Clinton have been treated. Women are trained not to speak up. So I want to share some of my own story as an illustration of what it's like to be a woman in this world. I don't think my experience is that different from many other women. Recent surveys suggest that 80% of women have experienced sexual harassment or abuse in their lifetimes. I want to talk about the workplace harassment I've experienced, guys with calendars of naked women in their offices, or dates that would not take no for an answer. But I want to start a little earlier in my life, because that's when it started. My first memory was in elementary school, and the guy who exposed himself in the car on the street on the way home. My friends and I were embarrassed and upset, but we didn't tell anybody because we sensed somehow it was shameful. About 7 years later, it was a neighbor who did the same thing, exposed himself to me in the side yard. This was not a stranger, but someone who was my friend, someone I had even thought I had a crush on. I avoided him from then on, angry, hurt, and ashamed. I never told my parents. And I never told my parents about the music teacher. Some of you have heard this story that I shared in a sermon 3 years ago, how I was active in my high school band and music program, how my parents were extremely active in the booster club, how most of my friends were in the band. During my sophomore year of high school, the music teacher started molesting me. It was our little secret, he said. I was his special one. It went on for most of the year. I almost told my guidance counselor, but I was not confident that she would believe me. I almost told my best friend, but the teacher was a deacon in her church, and I thought it would be too difficult for her. I never considered telling my parents, because I thought it would ruin everything, all the band trips, all the fundraising events. I thought that my parents and my friends would never forgive me for ruining everything. And somehow, I thought it was my fault, and I was ashamed. 10 years later, my parents told me that a junior high girl had accused the same teacher of molesting her. But they didn't think anything was going to come of it because it was really her word against his. This was in the 1980s when attitudes towards sexual abuse were somewhat different than they are now. I couldn't bear the idea that someone who had the courage to tell would not be believed. So I told my parents what happened to me. My father called the district attorney. I gave a deposition. The teacher pled guilty. As soon as I heard about this girl, who was likely 10 or 12 years younger than me, who was likely 12 years old, I knew in my heart that I could not be silent. However, opening this wound was not liberating for me. When I told my parents about the abuse, their main concern was why hadn't I told them at the time? Now, I think, of course, that's a natural response. They felt they had failed me. But it made it all about them. Never in the process of sharing my story was I given love or support for the hurt and trauma that had been caused to me. It didn't really matter that it had happened 10 years ago, 10 years earlier. The part of me that held the secret was stuck at the age of 14. Worse yet, the whole matter was handled over the phone. Both the deposition, the conversation with my parents, there was no one present for me, personally present, to give me love and support. I didn't realize how difficult that had been for me until years later, when I understood how my disclosure was unfinished and that a critical piece of healing was missing. My wound had been open, but I was not given what I needed to heal. Since that time, I have healed. Love, support, and therapy have allowed me to keep my wound open at long enough for the granular healing process to happen. And time has allowed me to have the courage to share my story. Opening this wound of sexual abuse is painful and difficult. And we must honor those who have the courage to speak their truth. Part of the narrative that suppresses women from speaking out is the idea that women lie about rape and sexual abuse. Our culture needs this story because we don't want to believe that sexual abuse is as prevalent as it is. Or because we don't want to believe, each of us as individuals, that someone we hold in high regard would be a predator. Not Garrison Keillor, we say. Not Bill Clinton. So let us end that narrative right now. Let us end the era where women feel like rape is their fault, that they are sexually harassed because they ask for it, because they look promiscuous, because they dare to call out their abuser. It took two trials and 20 women to speak up before Bill Cosby was found guilty of drugging and raping women. The power of the Me Too movement is this power of witness. Women standing up, women speaking up. There is power to the witnessing, to allowing people to see your wound, naming what happened to you. Power in supporting others who take the risk to speak up. I remember when I posted Me Too on my Facebook page back in October, I didn't even name what had happened to me, but I was nervous and a little bit afraid. I felt exposed and uncomfortable, wondering what would be the repercussions of that simple statement, Me Too. But when I saw the posts of many of my Facebook friends, many of whom are here in this congregation, I felt held and seen. That is the power of telling, the power of naming. This is how our wounds begin to heal.